The year is 2006. I'm Dave.
I'm Zach.
I'm Charlotte.
And this is My Marvelous Year.
Reading Club, where we go through the very best and most important of the Marvel Universe from its origins to today. I'm Charlotte, aka the Green Char, and today I'm joined by two very special co-hosts. The first one is the world's foremost expert on brood sex from personal and hands-on experience. It's Zach.
Me.
Zach, yep. What can you tell us about brood sex? What have you learned from this?
It hurts. It's very spiky. There's a lot of claws and teeth. But pretty good.
Sounds accurate. Good. Yeah. And then how many broodlings have you personally given birth to?
That's private. I don't like to bring my kids into the spotlight on this show.
Charlotte, I'm just going to tell you, yeah. You
please
never
please don't dox my children.
You never ask a man how many broodlings he's given birth to. Okay? The brood are very willing to divulge a lot of information. That is the biggest faux pas in brood culture.
That is very fair. And you are now hearing someone who once sent me to space just because I said Alpha Flight was fine, actually. It's Xavier Singh. How's it going, Dave?
You know, it's going well. Thanks for the intro, Charlotte. Green Char. Old listeners will know this, but My Marvelous Year has had a lot of hosts. we went through a lot of different hosts, and all of them kept saying things like, Alpha Flight's fine, actually. The Claremont run isn't very good. Walt Simonson, Thor stinks. Doctor Doom, kind of overrated. They have all been launched into space. I'll admit it freely now, and I'm happy with my decision, and I think they're happy wherever they landed.
Yeah, I should say what number of clone I am when I introduce myself to this episode. Today I'm Charlotte, number 53, I think, if I remember correctly.
We're gonna get it right.
How long I can last?
We're gonna get it right
for sure.
I'm sure.
Hell yeah. And today, as you might have guessed from those intros, we're talking about Planet Hulk. Hell yeah.
Had you read this before, Charlotte?
I had read this before, a while ago when I got into comics as a teenager. But, I remembered the big lines of it for the most part.
Zach, had you read it before?
Mm-mm. Nope. I had not. I kind of knew the basics. Of it, but not everything.
It's hard not to at this point, right?
Yeah, some of it surprised me. Some of it was not exactly what I thought it was going to be, but no, I knew the basic outline of it. I was excited for it. And I read the whole damn thing. I read the entire event, which is very easy to do because it's basically to read the whole event and not just the main event. There's four extra issues. There's four prelude Hulk issues, technically, yeah. And then mm-hmm. there's three Fantastic Four issues that I read, which, you know what, don't actually have anything to do with it. So
you don't need you don't really need the prelude.
It doesn't do anything.
It tries to sort of set the stage for the need for Planet Hulk, right? It's kind of trying to do a little bit of Hulk has committed some recent atrocities. Wait, right? But I think just if you followed the Marvel Universe for any period of time, you understand that if Hulk loses it and gets mad, he's a real threat. Right?
Can I push back on that a little bit? Because the prelude doesn't do that. And that's kind of what's weird about it. The prelude
is it the space station thing?
Yeah, it's Nick Fury being like, Hulk, you're the only one who can do this for us. There's a space station out of control. It's like AI. And then Hulk's like, all right, I'll be a hero. And then Nick Fury uses him, to do this, to shut down, an old S.H.I.E.L.D. AI that's gone rogue. Mm-hmm. And then Hulk's like, all right, I did your task. Bring me back. And then Nick Fury's like, nah. Shooting
into
space.
And that's the ruse to get him into space in the first
place. Apparently. Or maybe, there's a little bit of, Nick Fury sent him up to be like, this was a Hydra vessel that's gone rogue. And then he gets there and he finds out that it was a S.H.I.E.L.D. vessel or S.H.I.E.L.D. AI. And then so Hulk's pissed that Nick Fury lied to him. So Nick Fury might be... It kind of reads like when you're reading that comic, it reads as if this is a Nick Fury ploy to be like, well, I don't want Hulk to come back and be mad at me. So I'm going to send him to space. And then you flip to the next issue and now it's like an Illuminati thing. So like...
So there's the Nick Fury stuff you're describing. Yeah. That's in the pages of the preceding Incredible Hulk, correct?
Yeah.
And the Fantastic Four you mentioned, isn't that where he like a bunch of people die in Las Vegas while him and like...
Yeah, I don't even know if people die because he does go kind of nuts in Las Vegas. And that is
I think that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's where... That's the effort to say, oh, people will get hurt with the Hulk.
But even then, kind of, it lands on like... The thing and the Hulk come to an understanding. And the Hulk's like, the thing like shakes his hand and he's like, all right, see you later, buddy. Like, it's not exactly like that, but.
It's like those comics. Yeah, I remember feeling like they maybe heard rumblings of Planet Hulk coming, but they didn't know what they were going towards. Yeah. You know, because you start with Incredible Hulk number 92 and you start with the as yet unintroduced Illuminati. Because we haven't actually done our Illuminati pod yet, right?
I guess they haven't been called that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, everyone.
So, huge spoiler by Zach.
Huge spoiler.
But that's, I mean, that to me, that's a perfect introduction, I think.
Sure, yeah. It makes perfect sense. I'm not like, I'm not like, oh my God, where did this come from? Like, it makes enough sense when it happens. You know, you buy it as something like the world's smart men would think is a solution to Hulk. And I do love, I hinted at this before in earlier episodes, I do love that this is like actually a throwback to like, I don't remember off the top of my head, but like Incredible Hulk number 3 or something, like one of those.
Yeah, we talked about it. Yeah,
single digit issues from back way back when, where Thunderbolt Ross does the same thing. He uses Rick Jones to like lure the Hulk into a spaceship because they're like, the only way to deal with him is to blast him off into space. And even then when I read that, I had known about Planet Hulk. So when we read that, I was like, oh, this must be like a little inspiration or something. Can I make a Marvel Unlimited complaint or comparison?
Ooh.
Okay. Yeah. No, definitely.
DC Unlimited has a really nice feature that I didn't get the point of for a while, which is that like recently when they revamped to become DC Universe Ultra Infinite,
DC Universe Infinite Ultra, I believe.
Oh my God. Because it was DC Universe and DC Universe Infinite, and then they revamped it, and they added a ton of the newest, fanciest version, upper tier, has all the, like, Black Label stuff, all the graphic novels, all the, like, Vertigo, and you can...
It's kind of awesome. I do want to give a plug. Like, I don't use it as much, but every time I hop in there, I'm like, oh, hell yeah, this is fun as heck, and I've gotten a lot of Vertigo reading out of that. That I would not have done otherwise.
It's so nice they have all that. I mean, yeah, they've got like not just the DC Titan stuff, but they've got like Preacher and Why the Last Man, and you know.
The other week when we were doing our Mike Carey X-Men, and I was like, you know what? I've never read Mike Carey's Hellblazer and the graphic novel All His Engines, and I could just hop in and read it. That was nice. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, like all Lucifer's on there. Anyway, when they first did the latest revamp with all the graphic novels and stuff, I was like, what happens is you can open up a series, like let's say I opened up like, you know, the 1987 revamp of Superman or Man of Steel,
and it straight to a John Byrne Charlotte. Not sure if you caught that. Went straight to it.
Of course,
it's a really fine.
Good. That's a great Superman miniseries. That initial miniseries, Man of Steel. Ooh, really good. You can look at it by individual issues or by trades, or they even have it divvied up by omnibuses or whatever. Cool. So you can look at like the collect editions, which I initially was like, why would I ever care about this? Like, what? Why would you even give me the option? Like, it seems like a lot of work for something that is kind of useless.
Right.
And then as I've been working on like writing the DC list.
What's the DC list, Zach?
Oh, my DC year is a extremely tentative idea that we may do someday if we're not completely burnt out by the end of my Marvelous year.
I feel like we're getting close. I don't know about you.
Someone asked me the other day, and I was like, ooh, we're like 5 years away. It's closer than ever.
Yeah.
But when you're doing an event, there's collections that are really nice to just have. So I've been reading like Nightfall, the Batman series from the 90s, and it just collects it in the order. You can just read it as like the omnibus that was collected, and it has all the tie-ins, and it just puts all the issues in order, and it's as if you're reading a digital version of the big omnibus. Marvel has some stuff where they'll do like events. You know, if you search for Planet Hulk, you can find the Planet Hulk event.
Right.
They're not that well curated, and they're certainly not as well curated as like the collections that are physically released. So when I went for the Planet Hulk event on Marvel Unlimited, it just was the main event. It didn't have the four tie-ins, it didn't have the Fantastic Four issues, it didn't have the What If or the Marvel Handbook, all the like random stuff that if you bought the Planet Hulk collection, they have all the like extraneous stuff. So yeah, a little plug for DC and Marvel, get it together. Because this was unacceptable.
And it's doubly annoying because there isn't a... I don't know if there is one in DC Crisis on Infinite's Multiverse. But there isn't a playlist option on Marvel Unlimited, which is kind of annoying. Like, that could be a useful feature. I'd like to be able to, like, put a reading... Like, a customized reading order playlist to, I don't know, read the Krakoa era in the right order. Yeah. Like, read...
I would have lost my mind if playlists had been introduced to Marvel Unlimited during the heyday of like CBH reading orders.
Oh, yeah.
Like during like from 2014 to like 2017, I straight up like I would have there's no way my wife would have stayed with me. Like I would have I would have spent so much time on those.
DC has that, and I am kind of like I haven't played around with it too much, but the idea that we can just throw up like each year's reading as like a playlist can throw a link to, and people can just, you know, grab it and read it all in one playlist. It's really nice. It's a nice
kind of neat. Kind of neat.
Yep. Anyway,
else is kind of neat and actually germane to the Planet Hulk conversation? These comics. Planet Hulk's really good, guys. I don't know if y'all had this experience.
So good.
But Planet Hulk is awesome. I love it. Here's where I want to actually get a temperature from both of you.
I've never heard Charlotte so gleeful, so I'm...
Yeah. Is this your favorite... Let's just start here. Is this your favorite Hulk story you've ever read? How about that, Charlotte?
No. Ooh. Oh, sorry, Charlotte. I jumped in before he said
That is very tough. I think Immortal Hulk has to still be my favorite.
In the club. Okay. In the club, then.
Oh, in the club. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, probably so. Yeah. I think so.
Zach?
No, especially...
So you were thinking of Immortal too?
No, I was thinking of Peter David's Hulk.
Okay, okay.
I still like that more.
But, PD,
that's fair.
Todd McFarlane era.
No, I don't even know. I mean, the whole thing is such a weird, wild run, you know, that I haven't even read everything of, but just...
you're a fan.
I mean, I have now read the entirety of Planet Hulk, so I have a better grasp on that. And like, if I was handed one of the two, if I got to, you know, either read Planet Hulk or Peter David's huge run. I mean, it's
on density alone.
But Planet Hulk's. I don't want to start critiquing it. Planet Hulk's really good. It's a little conventional, you know, like
conventional.
I mean this kind of in a positive. This is 90% positive, 10% backhanded criticism. It's got like extreme screenplay energy to it in a way that Marvel comics generally don't. But like, this feels like it was written by like someone who works on screenplays and like gets like a huge narrative arc, which is something I appreciate that it feels like at the beginning he knew where this was going in the 15 issues, I think, that it runs. You know, I think like...
Because that's not a bad thing necessarily for this.
This
individual ongoing is made to feel like a movie, which kind of in comics terms just means like it feels like its own individual event. There's a reason it has been adapted
and
several
times narratively. Yeah, mm-hmm. But the flip side of that, the 10% criticism is that it does mean that like it never really surprised me story wise because I really like it felt a little conventional in its like narrative beats. So like once I got like three issues into this thing, I was like, okay, I think I kind of know what this is and I know where it's going, and then it never really deviated from that. Like he showed, I mean, I've seen a lot of movies like this. I mean, Gladiator is like this, right?
Hulk,
the outsider gets
thrown
in and becomes the freedom fighter liberator unwillingly, and
yeah,
you know, yeah, it's good.
If you wanted to say it's just Hulk Gladiator, you're not wrong enough that I'm like dismissive of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think what makes Planet Hulk kind of special on top of that is Greg Pak, who this is our first Greg Pak work we're reading. We've got Ladrone doing these great Barbarian Hulk covers throughout the entire series. It is I didn't realize how kind of important this was, you know? Like I think I kind of underrate cover art a lot of times. Just the consistency of Ladrone doing this Frank Frazetta Barbarian, you know, Hulk on every cover, it actually means a lot. And like each one of them is it just sells the vibe. It sells the aesthetic. It does feel special when you have like
it like
that
elevates
care given to it.
The story within. It kind of makes it seem like just by having those in mind, it kind of makes the whole thing a little more, you know, epic and iconic seeming, you know.
Yeah. And then you've got Carlo Pagulian on the like alternating arcs with Aaron Lopresti. And listen, we're not doing a current day Marvel thing, but it's just like you got to have that consistency of at least story arcs, of at least chapters artistically, and then the covers as well. When you lose that, it's so easy to lose your hold, I think, over readers. Okay. But what I love about what Pak brings to the table here is like he is so wholly committed to the world building, and that word
writing a whole D&D Souls book for for this arc.
Yes. Yeah. And like world building gets overused, I think, these days, you know, like anytime there's like any kind of fantasy, you know, the critiques or the praise often just goes to world building. But like this is a masterclass to me in comics by Pak of like actual creation, of actual commitment, of building, of baking in not just new characters, but like their religions and their foundations and the cult, different factions, cultures within Sakaar, which is the planet where Hulk gets sent to. A lot of storytellers throughout Marvel Comics history would never have even considered leaning in as hard as Pak does here. Like, there's a whole Gladiator guidebook that, like, you know, like you said, Charlotte, like there's a D&D source book in the middle of this. Yeah. And I don't know. And it's like, if you're not feeling it, fine. Like, you're not going to be enjoying it. But to me, that level of care is when you can see that a creator cares that much, I think as a reader, it's a lot easier to go along for the ride. And my barriers kind of drop a little bit. I like Greg Pak a lot. He's done a lot of different things that I've enjoyed. Friend of Comic Herald has come on the podcast. Great friend of mine. So obviously I'm a little bit biased here. One of my 115 best friends. But I think this is like for somebody to come in and like not be a Marvel name, and like the first big thing they do is Planet Hulk. Like, what a showcase! I mean,
really, this is his
big. He's definitely packing hit.
Oh my god! I just
I also use my worst possible accent in this, so the joke doesn't even work.
Yeah,
like, mispronounce it so bad. Okay,
yeah, he's pocking. Go ahead. He's pocking. You know what? He does do an Alpha Flight run pretty soon, so he'll be pucking heat.
Oh boy.
Just really plus one to your joke there.
I moved him down a notch in my best friend rankings revelation that he wrote Alpha Flight.
And you know, not to spoil things, but he does bring the original team back, so you know, this is a man who gets it. Man who gets Marvel Comics. About your point of world building, maybe it's a little like overrated as like a I feel like maybe it's overrated in talking about, I don't know, like fantasy novels, sci-fi novels, stuff like that, like as, you know, a really important aspect of
I think creators can overdo it. I see this a lot in comics now where creators, like, they put the world building first.
Sure. Yeah.
And I don't care yet. I actually think the Hickman Three Worlds, Three Moons is the leading example of this.
Where
they led with all the process and the creative experience of how you build a world, which on a technical how you make things level, you know, maybe has value, but on a storytelling level, it's like, I don't care yet. There's no narrative here. Planet Hulk doesn't have that problem at all. There's an immediate narrative hook, right? This comic is able to do both things very well, right? Hulk is shot into space. He's betrayed by Reed Richards, Iron Man, and Doctor Strange. Is Black Bolt in the footage?
Nope.
He didn't say anything, so I wasn't sure. but what we will come to know is the Illuminati, but we don't really know that yet. He's shot into space by them. They're like, you're too much of a threat. You're a danger. So we're going to send you somewhere where you can finally be alone and be at peace. Reed is doing a really good Charles Xavier impression of that, you know, sort of condescending, oh, I'm trying to help you attitude. Right. And Hulk, he goes through this wormhole, things go wrong. He actually lands on a populated planet, Sakaar. Well, and now he's a gladiator who has to fight his way to freedom. There's enough of an action hook there, right, to get our attention right off.
You're rushing that point, too. The narration is really good because he just has Reed's narration overlaid of him being like, we're sending you to a planet with, you know, no sentient life, but enough vegetation and game for you to, you know, live comfortably. And, yeah, like, that narration is overlaid with him landing on a planet being, like, swarmed by slavers, right?
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, really good stuff. My point about world building, when I was saying that before, is that Marvel and DC are bad at it. That's so, like, maybe it's overrated in some regards, but...
can we talk about why they're bad at it?
Sure, go for it. I just...
I think they're bad at it now because the worlds have already been built, right?
Sure. Well, I specifically mean, like... I think I specifically mean when, like, someone jumps into creating either, like, an Elseworlds or a sci-fi community or civilization that's, you know, one of our characters is transported to or something. Like, we get this kind of stuff a lot where someone is trying to build some, and so often, like, God, what did we just read something fairly recently where I was like, I felt like it was Mark Waid. I don't actually know it's Mark Waid, but I'm just going to pin it on him. Mark Waid did a bad job at this recently in some unknown comic.
Okay.
I can't remember. Yeah, I don't remember what it was. But, yeah, it's tough to make you care about this. I mean, a good example is
the degree of difficulty Thanos, is very high.
Those Thanos comics in the Ultimate line were some of the worst. I think those were Warren Ellis, maybe? The Ultimate Fantastic Four?
Might be, yeah.
That's Mike Carey, I think.
It is Mike Carey, because it was surprisingly terrible, but it, like... was trying to build this whole little, like, sci-fi thing, and it was just awful. But yeah, like, getting something great. I mean, you know what? He does the really smart thing. It's grounded in, like, kind of a simple narrative. Like, there's simple, clear, and effective stakes to what Hulk is doing, and then you kind of pick up the pieces as it goes along, and it feels like he knows what he's about with these characters. So, like, he's dropping the hints and you kind of pick it, you know, like, you don't immediately get everything from these characters and you might feel lost at sometimes. Like, once in a while I was like, oh, I don't quite get the dynamics here. I think I'm missing something, you know, like, I don't think it's perfect. I mean, once in a while, like, I feel slightly astray, but, like, by the end of this, I was like, I know all these different people. I know their relationships culturally with each other, like, their history, all that stuff is really well laid out. The bug people versus the brood people versus the spikes and the red. I mean, I don't know their names. Maybe that's something you work on, better names for them. Because
red, super Meek, Korg, some of the most.
Oh no, their names. They're game. Like their names, but they're like sci-fi culture name. Like, what are the bug people called? What are
the Meeks? The little Meeks.
I don't actually know that they have names. I think they're just called, like, natives by the Imperials, and then, like, the actual humanoid looking guys are just called Imperials. Like, they don't have, I don't think they ever get, like, a species name.
Yeah, just I would just call them Meek pinkies, was a member,
because that's mostly how Hulk refers to
that's
them.
How they make fun of each other. Meek was a member of the planet Sakaar's native race of insectoids, so yeah, maybe no name.
There you go.
Anyway, Meek
there
rules. Yeah, Meek's the
Charlotte best. What do you think about Zach's comment up front that it's a little predictable, that the kind of, you kind of know where it's going. Did you have that experience?
Don't pit us against each other, okay?
What do you think about what Zach said?
I don't fully disagree with it. I do think another less smart Marvel comic wouldn't have ended the same way, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I think that ending, I'd actually forgotten in how, like, brutally quick it is.
Yes.
I think that part is surprising. I think, like, I'd agree that the general structure of it, of the uprising and all that, yeah, that's, like, fairly predictable. But I'm also think I'm judging this on, like, my regular standard and not my Marvel standard. Sure. Coming back to this. Yeah.
But that's a compliment, but,
like,
right?
Yeah, it is, because it's insanely better than, like, most alien species world building that we've seen. Like, this is way more thought out than any Skrull, Kree, Shi'ar, story we've ever seen, right?
That's a really good comparison.
Like, the main alien races of the Marvel Universe wish they were as, like, interesting and intricate and, like, rich in storytelling as Sakaar is.
Yeah.
And so when that all gets destroyed, you're like, holy hell, that's like,
right.
That is.
I like them.
Surprising. Feeling like, I like them. I don't want that tragedy to happen. And also just like on the Marvel side, being like, oh, you just dared to destroy a whole new world of stories.
A whole new world.
New fantastic? What? I don't know. but like, you just destroyed a whole new storytelling potential and like very interesting place in your universe just for the sake of it's more interesting for the story, which I think is like pretty daring on Greg Pak's part. Like that's not something you see in every Marvel comic. I think overall Planet Hulk is one of those rare Marvel comics where I'm like judging it on just being a story and not being a Marvel comic, which is like, I love when that happens. Like, I was...
Yeah, it's a nice feeling.
I started reading this in the train yesterday. I'm planning on finishing it today and just couldn't let it go. I had to read the whole thing as once. It's so good. And it's been a while since that happened to me with a Marvel comic. So, yeah, it's so good.
I think we all had a similarly positive thing, it sounds like, too. Because I expected to scan it and refresh my memory. And I wound up just genuinely sitting and reading every issue. I didn't actually think I would be doing that.
I do think I honestly expect... I think my expectations were for it to be fun, but more lore relevant than anything else.
Mm.
Like, kind of like maybe Avengers Disassembled. People talk about it a lot because it's a big event for the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
And also there's just like the cool factor of Hulk as a gladiator and like all that stuff.
Hulk wearing a fun hat.
Yeah. And I wasn't expecting it to be like, oh, this is actually one of the better Marvel comics I've read in a while. So cool.
I would say it's in contention for the best Marvel book we've read in 2006.
Oh,
probably
sure.
Probably the Brubaker Lark Devil in Cell Block D is my other serious contender.
Yeah.
A tough one, actually. You know what actually it reminds me of? It does. So I want to make the Devil in Cell Block D comparison because we had in our My Marvelous Year exclusive Slack, which you can join by backing us at patreon.com/mymarvelousyear. There was a commenter. I think it was, is it Jakob, Zach?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Jakob. I had a comment which was like Devil in Cell Block D, my main complaint, and I'm paraphrasing, so apologies if I get this wrong, but I think it was something to the effect of like, I thought Daredevil would be in prison longer. You know, he was kind of like, there was kind of like a sense of disappointment that they burned through that.
Yeah.
It wasn't super negative. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, how could they? It was just like, oh, I thought that would last longer. That surprised me or whatever. Planet Hulk kind of plays it the opposite for most of its run, where it really sits with the new development, right? Like the first 10 plus issues until we get to the final 2-3, right? We really sit and feel Hulk as the slave made to fight in the gladiator pits, Hulk as the reluctant leader of a rebellion, Hulk as someone, you know, fighting a war to become, again, the reluctant, like, emperor and Green Scar and savior, you know, messianic figure of this planet, Sakaar. That is, like, that, the Pak really takes its time, right? And Devil in Cell Block D does this thing where it kind of just, it has a status quo, That is surprising, that is different than often what happens in Marvel, which Planet Hulk has as well. But it's like, instead, it's like, yeah, we're actually just going to kind of burn through all of our fun ideas about as fast as we can, right? Like in one story arc. And I think it's done well. And I, as a reader, now especially, I tend to prefer Marvel work that takes that approach. And honestly, it's not even just Marvel stuff. Like at TV, I have the same feeling where I'm like, I love it when a series is just like, we're going to go so hard and fast through all of our big ideas. And we're just going to see if we can sustain that energy moving forward. But we're not worried about the long game necessarily. Planet Hulk kind of does the opposite, at least until the very end. And the thing that I find impressive about it is I didn't get bored. You know, I do think the rebellion phase in particular is a little overlong.
Yeah, I think
you could have gone through that a little faster.
That's probably my biggest critique, and it's not much of one because I didn't get bored, but it is 14 issues, and I think it probably could have been a few less, like one or two less, especially in that middle section. You're right.
Yeah. I think Monster Month probably would have made for more straining experience because we have the benefit of reading all this back to back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably after 10 issues Monster Month, I'd be like, okay, I'll just read the TP. This is.
Yeah, the fact that they let him do this so early on in working in Marvel, that it's about as close to a closed system of a comic with a, you know, big Marvel character as you get, where you can't just jump in to Planet Hulk, you know, pick up an issue halfway through, be like, wow, look at that cover, and then read it and be like, oh, I'm up to date. Like, you really kind of got to read this whole thing, you know.
But also, on the other hand, it's one of the rare Marvel comics that you can basically put in the hands of anyone without much context. Sure. And be like, that's a graphic novel that is very easy to read with little to no context about the Marvel Universe.
Which, slightly damning, I think one issue I do have with this is that, this doesn't necessarily feel like, quote-unquote, my Hulk. I don't mean my Hulk.
Hashtag not my Hulk, really.
I mean Hulk, period. He as a personality through this, I think it's slightly... Hulk's personal struggle during this gets slightly, sidelined, I think. So by the end of it, you're, reminded of Hulk's... the final issue or two has some stuff with Hulk being, struggling with the crown and, you know, the responsibility he's been given and his worry that it's all going to come crumbling down around him, you know, or he's going to lose everybody again. All that stuff happens at the very end. But I think throughout the comic, I'm not getting too much Hulk Banner, especially, you know, Banner is.
Well, you're not getting any Banner.
Yeah. He gets mentioned offhandedly a couple times. Otherwise Hulk is this is not, you know, I'm fine with Hulk retooling his personality arc to arc, and it's not but I just I feel this doesn't feel like it's building on the Hulk that I've known. This guy's pretty nice. It's a pretty good nice, he's very righteous anger Hulk here. You never quite get a hint that there's out of control Hulk is here. He's always there with the snappy one-liners when he's getting his angriest. But it's always pointed in the right direction. He's very he's a very wise king. There's a lot of biblical stuff here, I think. There's definitely some Jesus metaphor laid on top of this, I think, with, you know, Hulk selflessly taking all the violence upon himself, you know, instead of having people inflict it on one another, stuff that. This is all extremely minor stuff, because I do think
intentional. I mean, it's not.
I'm curious, how this will, World War Hulk, a great lead-in to this. I don't know anything about World War Hulk, so I know the basic outline of Planet Hulk. I don't know what World War Hulk will be like, and
you know what you do know, though, Zach?
Hulk
flying towards Earth with that sword in the last page.
Yeah, yeah. Well, exactly. Oh, I mean, it's great. It's it's a great ending that leads in, that got me so psyched for World War Hulk, but. Just based on this, it's kind of hard to picture what he'll do with a Hulk back in the traditional Marvel setting, because you don't really get a good indication of that here, right? What would that Hulk look like? How does he interact with the Avengers? How does he interact with, you know, Banner, right? In Banner's life back on Earth. I mean, I'm curious. It'll be curious to take this version that he's kind of built and then throw it back. It's hard to square this with Immortal Hulk. You know,
that's not necessary.
I know, but yeah
I don't actually agree with that. I think it's very easy to square. I think Immortal Hulk is kind of the answer to
I mean, tonally, not
sure,
Not plot-wise or canon-wise,
I think,
or anything.
Charlotte, what do you mean it's the answer? What do you mean by
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just from Zach saying that, like, this doesn't feel like... It feels kind of like a kind of different version of Hulk that, like, doesn't work according to the rules that we know of, that, like, doesn't have that, like, insane anger out of control. I think, like, I can't really discuss in what ways without spoiling without spoiling Immortal Hulk.
Yeah.
But just the idea of this being a slightly different version of Hulk is actually kind of literal. And also, I think just the context of this being Hulk on a different planet where the social rules are different and like where it works differently, and being a huge, powerful monster beast is like has a different meaning. I think that's like that's kind of part of what I love about this, and I think is intentional, is the reason why you see less of, oh, Hulk is a dangerous beast and like we don't know what he's unpredictable and we don't know what happens, is that, well, now he's in a context where that doesn't matter as much and people aren't, have a different reaction to that.
It's kind of the perfect tool for this setting, right?
He doesn't have Avengers or Fantastic Four being like, oh, we need to stop him before he destroys the world. He has people being like, hell yeah, destroy the world, please. Mm. That's exactly what we want.
I do wish we, like, that. I feel like that's something that would be, like, nice if it was, integrated into the comic, like, a little more of, like...
Yeah, and I guess that's the...
Go on, please.
I guess that's the part where I'm thinking Immortal Hulk solves it for me, because I think Immortal Hulk is...
Well, I don't think you even have to go... I don't even think you have to jump to Immortal, because I think it connects with that Peter David sense of there's all these variants and versions of Hulk, right? That's a legacy here of, you know, like some of the most thrilling moments in the David run for me are like, oh yeah, now he's Joe Fixit, right? And he kind of becomes this like alter ego product of his environment, sort of version of Hulk. I think you could read Planet Hulk as that, right? This is Gladiator Hulk persona. Yeah. And this is also, you know, and it's kind of like, with the one-liners and stuff, it's kind of like, you ever like, you're like, you know, not with your usual group of friends, you're like with a different group and you're kind of, you know, it's just different vibes and you're like, oh, I can kind of be more myself or a different person, you know? Yeah, yeah, sure. And it's like, yeah, I can be funny here. I can be goofy here and they won't tease me or whatever, right? I feel like Hulk's doing that a bit on Planet Hulk. I do, Zach, I do want to, one thing you said there is like the ending portion of Hulk's thinking would have been nice. That's when I say it's maybe a little long in the middle. It's actually not even that I want fewer issues. It's that I wanted more Emperor Hulk issues. I actually think is where my, like I, the rebellion is a foregone conclusion to me, right? I think once we get past the Silver Savage, which is a cool as hell turn.
Oh yeah, that's fun. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And we get, you know, okay, they're leading rebellion. You know, he's going to win, right? You know, Hulk's going to smash. I really like God Emperor Hulk. I'd be here for like,
but
what does he look like as the emperor of this region?
Six issues of sure.
For centuries.
I think that's why the ending is so tragic and like works so well to me, because like it takes away the potential. It happens right at the moment where he's about to build something for the first time. Like, oh, we're gonna see Hulk actually build something and do what he wants to do with the world, and like build instead of destroy and help people. And that's the moment where it's taken away from him.
Yeah, very Greek tragedy.
Perfect. Right. It's perfect.
I mean, he literally is about to start a family. And it all gets
snatched
away.
I do love the idea of God Emperor Hulk as like a what if, and I'm sure there's been plenty of that. But like for the story, I think cutting it right then is...
And it's literally like his past coming back to, you know, like blow him up, right? It's nothing happening on Scar, or Sakaar. It's Reed Richards' stupid machine blowing up while
it's
his
effective
narration plays in the background. I think just like the thing that could have elevated this from like, this is a really good comic to like a favorite for me, I think, is that like Hulk's, we get a lot of like Hulk being like the hesitant leader, but it didn't feel like it was tied into like really clearly like his psychology of like I really could have used Hulk being like, you know, oh no, I'm just a brutal monster. Like, I don't know anything but to destroy. And like having, you know, his friends and people like lead him, kind of watching him like you, I wanted to be kind of like cheering him becoming the Hulk that we like wanted to see, right? But he kind of is just that throughout. Like, he always is just fighting the right guys. He's always just like kind of on the right side of things. He's always doing the honorable thing. He just might be a little surly about it.
I think there's work done early that suggests otherwise. I mean,
those like magma lava gladiator pit
in the first gladiator pits. Yeah, he's not leading a righteous charge. He's still like protecting, I will just his fight anyone. And
yeah,
well, kind of by accident. Like they're kind of just put together circumstantially, and he's weakened and controlled. Like that's one of the smart things about what Pac does early is like Hulk is weakened. He's still Hulk. He's still gonna come out on top, but like he can actually be put down here, and be hurt. You know, and he's very self interested in a way that I think does feel Hulkish. I get what you're saying, Zach, in that yes, ultimately he is the hero of a Marvel comic. But he's not like warm and cuddly with Meek.
Is like that anger against everyone and everything is like very present to the point of being destructive. And like, I don't know, the battle with the Silver Surfer was like, oh, you've taken away my chip. I'm fine. I can, and just like keeps pummeling him into the ground.
Yeah,
like I think that's it basically. But I see what you mean of it being.
I mean, it's not totally like out of left field that he becomes the hero here. I think it does okay. I just it didn't have like it didn't feel like a huge arc for Hulk to me.
Huge character arc, you mean, right?
He
really grows or something. See, I think he actually is starting to right at the end there, and I feel that with what Charlotte's saying,
yes,
where it's like, we're going there, and then we're not. And yes. I actually do find it pretty genuinely emotional.
To me, the comparison is his John Wick, right? Like, he's just like, every time he tries to build something and get away from it, it's like, it has to be taken away from him. I like him being John Wick and not having necessarily a character arc. And just like being that. And that's kind of a thing he'll talk about Captain America. Like, he doesn't change, the world changes around him, and that's his arc. And I think I like Hulk being that, but the other way around, right? Like, he doesn't change, the world changes around him for the worst, and he's kind of cursed. I don't know. I see what you mean, and I can see the version of it that does that and potentially is better, but I do like that.
The end of this is where I kind of start seeing like the actual change coming, because he starts to soften and like him like allowing the spikes that like, you know, parasite race to like sap gamma from him every day, right? It being like a daily ritual where he just sits there and lets them like pull his energy from him until he becomes like a sickly banner for a bit. That's the stuff where I'm like, oh, this is like interesting, like. That's an interesting choice for Hulk, right? Like, Hulk having calmed down enough and becoming, like, a leader enough that he sees that's the path forward, and he's the only one strong enough to do this, but it's not through fighting. It's through, like, allowing himself to be, you know, made vulnerable. I think that's a really good choice. That's really interesting. And, yeah, like, the tragedy of the end does come because he is at his most, like, he's turning over a new leaf.
I want to talk about one thing we've alluded to, but haven't really cemented, which is how brilliantly Pac uses Marvel Cosmic in Planet Hulk. Because I think the initial sort of like storytelling thinking would be you have him crash land on a Shi'ar planet, or, you know, he's on a Kree moon or something, right? You would tap into the Marvel Cosmic
Kree
landscape. Okay. and instead, Pac's like, no, we're going to have him go through this weird wormhole, which takes you to like an otherwise undiscovered planet. So this allows me to do something very new and actually additive, right, to Marvel and to the Hulk legacy. But then at the same time, he picks his spots with where Marvel cosmic entities can enter the picture. So we get a Brood, a familiar face. We get the Silver
Brood's
Savage
here too
in the first arc, which is the biggest character pull. Right, the biggest cosmic pull, kind of by accident, but also like that's a thrill, right, getting the Hulk, and it's like, well, who could they possibly have? Oh, they got the Silver Surfer, right? It's a big deal. And then you get Korg, which, of course, like, I don't know, now Korg being like famous through Thor Ragnarok, it seems like maybe more obvious than it was. It's like, listen, nobody was pulling from Thor's debut in Journey into Mystery, the Rock.
Yeah.
You know, like doing that smartly. And I love how it's just a little, it's just picking enough out of Marvel Cosmic to like scratch that itch, you mm-hmm. know, of the longtime comics fandom. But it's also like closer to creator owned in the sense of like, well, everything yeah. else about Scar is new. I think it's a really nice balance.
That's kind of like the best Marvel comics, right? Where it kind of feels creator owned, but you know, but using the tools that they have in the world.
I mean, we often say that as like, or I guess I do, as like inherent praise. And there are instances where it's not, right? I mean, you can, if you, you know, there are instances where, and I can't think off the top of my head, but it's like, you know, you get a property and you kind of go too far removed from, like, you're too much doing your own thing. You know what I mean? Right?
Give me
like,
one example.
There's a negative.
Of a time it actually went bad?
Yeah, I'm going to have to think about that. Yeah. I am going to have to think about that.
I am curious.
Because am I just thinking in theory, I mean, and actually it's never been bad?
Of a time it actually went bad, I don't know, but I know that that's something people... That is an opinion of comics fan and superhero comics. Like that's I work at a comic shop. That's something I hear a lot about. Peach Momoko's Ultimate X-Men that just came out.
Oh, okay.
Nerd. Just nerd stuff.
Yeah,
it is.
But yeah, like, yeah. It is a criticism that exists, right? That's that sure. It doesn't come from nowhere.
I'm gonna have to look through.
Doesn't feel like superhero comics doesn't feel like X-Men. I think that's something that can
happen. I mean, that was a Krakoa era X-Men complaint too. Was like Zach's hashtag not my X-Men kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm always saying that about characters.
It's funny you said that about this Hulk because I would say otherwise. As a group, we're definitely all pretty pretty pro changing the core of the character. Like we're not in the core, but like we're all pretty pro like taking a swing.
I just think, to be clear, not my Hulk was a goof. I just mean that like it didn't I appreciate that too. Like I have no preciousness about like, oh, they completely retooled a character here. But you know, like it does have to feel like intentional and like with, you know, some kind of to some purpose, I guess. I'm not saying this didn't strongly. I just like I didn't get a good core. Like I said, when he is heading back to Earth, I'm like, how do you square like this Hulk with the Hulk whose history is on Earth, right? Because I think they're slightly different, and I haven't seen like the connective tissue between the two.
I think we'll see.
I'm psyched. Like that was really good. I'm curious, you know, like leads into that really well.
I'd be surprised what your opinion is of Planet Hulk after reading World War Hulk, and it's kind of same thing for Planet Hulk. I read World War Hulk a while ago, but don't remember anything outside of like the big lines of it and stuff. Like I'm probably gonna be surprised by all Hulk in the same way or in some other way than I was with Planet Hulk. I'm surprised if Will Hulk answers some of your criticisms or questions about Planet Hulk, Infinity War Endgame style, like is a better Hulk. I'm curious. Sure.
Yeah,
I do think we have to temper expectations a little bit in the sense of it's a big jump, not just because Hulk's come back to Earth, but like you go from this, you know, kind of like you were saying, Zach, like it's kind of wild Pac got the space to do this for as long as he did, just within the pages of The Incredible Hulk. Like this is untouched. This is one writer, two artists, one cover artist, you know, like it's a very consistent product and focused thing. And then World War Hulk becomes, oh, this was really good. So now you're the Marvel event of 2007. And obviously we'll talk about it when we get there. But it is like, that's a pretty different ballgame, I think, in the history of Marvel. All our favorite stuff is the former, not the latter, you know? That said, I'll just tease, I remember loving World War Hulk. And I don't think that's the consensus, but I'm kind of hoping to bring that energy to it. Planet Hulk's awesome. Like, there's a reason it's a huge deal. It's not just the concept. Hulk goes to a planet and he's Gladiator. Like, it delivers on that a little more. I do think it's a little long in the middle. But
I'm glad you said that, because I thought I was going to be
No.
Just a negative Nancy.
I think it's true. Like, listen, I could have spent a little less time with Meek in the Hive. You know?
I even really like how, like, Meek's insect thing and the Brood's insect thing have, like, crossover.
Well, they're going to say have rough sex.
Yeah, that was cool. it felt like an obvious connection. Like, they both kind of have similar, like, communication and similar, like, society structure. So they had the most in common. And God, when Meek evolves, like, your Meek is about to evolve.
King Meek.
And then he comes out so buff.
Yeah.
It's so sick. Meek's great.
It was cool.
Dave,
any other favorites? How do we feel about Red King, Kyra?
Red King could have been a
Shadow
little
Guard, any of this stuff?
Red King could have been a little less mustache twirly to me. Like
a little too Joaquin Phoenix in Gladiator.
At some point he was just a little like Brat King kind of, but like not in a way I found that interesting. I mean, he was like a good foil for everyone, and you know, I was glad to see his head crushed or whatever, but I could have used a little more like maniacal evilness instead of just kind of him being fussy, I guess.
He's pretty murderous comic. He's pretty barbarous,
yeah.
I guess,
yeah,
yeah.
Stupid suit though. I never once bought that he has a cool suit and then he could like beat up Hulk,
hang with the like Hulk. That yeah right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dave, I did just get a message privately, a DM. I'm just going to summarize here at the very end. Let me skim all this, blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, just wanted to say that just because a story doesn't hit for Zach the way it does for you, Dave, doesn't mean he doesn't like comic books. So thank you for sending me this message. I'm not going to out you because you did send this to me privately, but thank you so much. They just listened to our Mutant Massacre episode. Which I do want to respond.
No episode in the history of My Marvelous Year has
so
elicited lengthier and more in-depth feedback.
Heat on both sides. We both have gotten so much heat over that one.
Absolutely.
I think we were both particularly
revered. That is the...
I've gotten no hit from the...
Yeah, because Charlotte, you haven't let your guard drop like we did on Mutant Massacre. Like, Zach and I both just went... Like, that's the most... probably transparent and just like just weirdest energy we could have possibly brought to a live recorded podcast. So Charlotte, like one of these days
I won't listen
have to
it again.
Just lose your mind live on air with us.
Yeah, I won't listen to that episode again. I refuse to hear how heated we actually got. In my mind it's grown so like in my mind
it's not that bad actually. In my mind
we're like screaming, but yeah.
No, I don't think
I feel like that.
Yeah, I listened to that episode and there was no screaming. It was just kind of a weird energy in the set.
The other episode I remember that I feel like is the other one we got slightly heated or I remember getting heated at you. I don't know, maybe when both
Which one?
Ways. What's it? Deathlock. McDuffie's Deathlock.
The Souls
91.
Of Cyberfolk Deathlock?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I got a little rev.
You were heated on that one?
Yeah. I remember getting kind of like, yeah. I think I was just annoyed at your arguments for that one.
I remember we disagreed. I wouldn't have, I would not have remembered that episode otherwise. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you know what I kind of remember it being? If I had to like out of context summarize it, I would be like, you were arguing that the comic wasn't very good. And I was arguing that W.E.B. Du Bois's Souls of Black Folks was worth reading.
Yeah, well,
and
that's not quite.
We were basically having different conversations.
Yeah. Yes. That is true. I think that's actually the crux of with my.
There's a graphic novel version that came out last year of the Souls of Black Folks, which if you
really
haven't read,
interesting,
is a good way to do it. It's a lot of really valuable material in there.
So thank you for this this anonymous writer. I really appreciate it. I always love to hear that. So Dave, consider yourself roasted.
I want, maybe we could talk about it on a variant, I definitely think as we've done My Marvelous Year, I think our understanding of where the other is coming from has definitely improved, you know. If we were more bullheaded or stubborn, right, we definitely could have just like shut it down after the mutant massacre. Right? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, like word odds, we're not going to keep doing this. I mean, Charlotte, you've like having a child has changed us, I think, probably is the big
thing. You know what really helped is that the next episode was Daredevil Love and War, and that was like some of the most effusive I've ever been.
Do you think you love that comic in part because you were like, I better come in pot? Like, do you think subconsciously?
No. Of course not. No. No, I'm way more objective than that, Dave, in all of my opinions.
Okay.
But
okay.
No, for sure. I mean, so I just saw this message, and, you know, what I will respond to this person is like, oh, well, hang on, because Dave and I get much better at communicating with each other.
I don't think we were bad. I just think that episode in particular was like, it was one of those like couples fights, and
sure.
You don't hear those. Like, most people would be smart enough to be like, hey, we were in a weird place. Let's try this again. You know what I mean? And we just put it out there. And honestly, I'm kind of proud of that.
I do fun. I do get more less hated at you since I've joined the show.
yeah.
Well, thank
before
you.
It was
I'm
just
glad.
Me angrily listening to the show and being like, no, they... And Dave, I'm only half
how
joking.
Dare you have these opinions? That's what you were always saying. You're always mad at Dave, right?
Exactly. No, I'm joking, but that has happened. Like, I know that happened like a few times when I just listened to the show. That was like,
of course, yeah.
Like having arguments in my head with you guys that
what's
now
the...
I'm able to have on air.
Yeah. What's the podcast you find yourself getting angriest at? Like in your day to day, Zach? What's yours?
Ooh. Oh, I don't know. I don't listen to
that much.
But the Watch Out for Fireballs boys, I've listened to so many hundreds of hours of their podcasts over the years that like sometimes I did find myself getting like actually heated about like one of their opinions. But
I've
listened to these guys talk about, I mean, they put out way more stuff about way more wide ranging opinions about everything than we do. You know, and I have had the moment of being like, I'm getting like actually angry at like, how could he think like this? And then that's where I'm like, oh, I need to back up.
I had that experience circa 2015 with War Rocket Ajax, which is a comics pod. They do their Every Story Ever specials where they rank comics. And I've definitely had it more so with like, it wasn't even necessarily like opinions about the works. But like a lot of times it would be like one of them would be like, oh, yeah, I've never read it. I'd be like, why are you talking about it then?
Sure.
Really mad. But don't worry. I've healed my relationship. I think in part that's why when I often joke like that I don't like comics podcasts, a big part of it is like it is oftentimes hard to listen to, I don't know, like people get things wrong or just that there is that nerd part of my brain definitely that I just can't turn off. Where I'm like, well, we could have done this better on MMY or
and
something.
It brings out the worst instinct of like, I should tell them. And then like, even this person.
Oh, I've never been there.
This person is extremely nice who wrote this email. And I framed it to be like it was a slam against you. But they were very kind in their email.
I did not interpret that as a slam.
Okay, well, good. I mean, that was my intention. I was trying to frame it that way. Yeah. But, you know, they are responding to that episode, which we recorded in 2020, maybe 2021. Like,
if that's a pandemic year episode too, like cut us some slack, people. Come on.
Yeah, the idea sometimes getting like I do get messages sometimes about something that we recorded like 4 years ago, and I'm
when
like,
did that
I
come
have
out?
No idea what you're talking about.
Oh, sure.
You want me to find?
Yeah,
it?
Sure.
It is 2020 September or August 2020. So yeah,
come on.
Yeah, I'm a whole new man at this point. You know, like
I mean, it's a whole new, a whole new
world, a new fantastic co-host, podcaster.
Charlotte is on the pod with Dave's dad bod. Now I'm in a whole new world.
Okay, he's just
perfect.
Still going with it.
Hell yeah!
Yeah, I'm a father now of many broodlings.
You're so many broodlings.
So many broodlings.
Yeah.
Okay. Any final Planet Hulk thoughts? It's all we read today.
Good job, Greg Pak.
Pretty good.
Does he do? I kind of think I can't get into this without spoiler stuff. But a long Hulk run.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Like he's definitely. I mean, Pak's definitely still most well known for Hulk.
Okay.
There's going to be an incredible Hercules run that I know one of our patrons has already added some comics too in coming years, which that'll be fun to go into.
Back when I was trying to do like a Twitch comic thing for like a month. I ended up doing some Incredible Hercules on there at that same patron's request.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. So,
interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Charlotte was one of the three viewers.
Cool. Pac is the co-creator of Amadeus Cho, who we haven't talked about yet.
Who we get a little peek of here, but it didn't feel like enough to warrant talking about him.
We get a peek of?
Yeah, in Hulk issue 100, there's like a little... In 100, it's like an 84-pager, and it's got a bunch of Silver Age stuff, and it has Cho side story. Which, I couldn't believe it, that they put in like two or three Silver Age... I think two Silver Age issues in the back of this, and they didn't put the one where they sent him to space. I was like, oh, perfect, this is what they're going to do. But that's another thing that DC really nailed. I mean, it doesn't make sense to do it now.
Well, maybe like Silver Age influence?
No, the like 80-page comic that is like one new story and three old stories from their like huge back catalog, which doesn't make as much sense in the digital era, but I love that about DC, like all their old, you know, Justice League and adventure or action, no, yeah, Action Comics and Detective Comics and all that stuff. They would be like, here's one new Batman story, one Plastic Man story, and then three issues from somewhere in the last 30 years. And it would just be like a way of keeping their back catalog alive. And,
I like it if they're connected. I don't really like it.
I mean, I don't read them now, obviously, because like I can just go find those issues and read them on their own. But like, when you're like earlier, you know,
yeah,
if you were a kid in the 60s, you don't have access to the 40s DC comics, right? Or
when I was a kid in the 60s, I did not. It's definitely true.
Even in the 90s, I think it would have been cool, right? Like,
I would have read those 7,000 times. You're right.
Yeah, an Amazing Spider-Man issue that's like the one issue from this month, and then one, you know, John Romita issue, like slapped in there in the back, connected or even not connected, just reprinting them, you know, exactly 20 years ahead.
We'll have to save this for a variant, because the conversation around reprints and kind of the strategies there is all, I all find very strange.
Well, there's no point now.
But there's like Marvel makes, or they do these, you know, they do these reprints of like famous issues and sell them for, you know, I don't know, like cover price. And it's like, I'm just always like, who's this for? Like, I don't get it.
I've bought a couple of those just to like, I mean, literally a couple. I think I have two, but that's because I, you know, sometimes would like hang them up on the wall and it's kind of a cool little display.
Sure. Decoration. I could see that. Yeah. I would buy one if I was at a con and like, I didn't have anything for Gurse Claremont to sign.
Sure.
And it was you could sign my reprinted kind of, Uncanny 142 or something.
It's kind of, you know what? I kind of wish they would put the original coloring in those and not the, digital coloring. Because it would be fun to hold one that literally felt like this is an exact replica just on like nicer paper, but it was, you know.
I've never wanted to have broodlings with you more than when you just signed.
Hell yeah.
I was trying to check out Barry Windsor Smith's Conan. The Barbarian, because everybody's like Barry's Conan. What a time. Mm-hmm. What a time to be alive. Roy the boy writing, mm-hmm. Barry doing just the best work he's ever done on Conan. So I'm like, all right, I got to check this out. So I go and I get the Conan Chronicles, a Dark Horse reprint. And I'm like, I'm going to check out some OG Barry Windsor Smith Conan. It is recolored so flipping digitally.
Oh, yeah.
That it's like, I have no idea what this looked like. I have zero
gradients
idea.
Gradients and stuff. Right, like. It sucks when that stuff is not, like, you can still find the Simons and Thor, like, the old versions, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, there's some of that stuff that is just, like Sandman. This is annoying. Sandman, you cannot find the original coloring for that anymore. It is struck from, at least, the internet. You'd have to go back and buy,
you both are gonna can't talk anymore, losing it. You are gonna have to come visit and read my single issues of Sandman. So you can get the true experience.
Ooh, that's fun. I mean, I even have the like absolute editions.
We went 5 minutes too long, and now all of our are just swollen.
I bought those like 15 years ago. I've had those for a long time, and even those have the recoloring, and you can't get in the Alan Moore Swamp Thing in the absolute editions. I have those, and that's all recolored, and it looks fine. Like I don't have as much a problem because those look good at least, even if they are totally retooled. But it's terrible when they look terrible, like those Jack Kirby Loki recolorings that are notoriously bad and they just look like so overdone. I feel like we've had this conversation before, but like I'm not opposed to recoloring. I'm not a purist about it. It's just that like To me, it's that idea. It's just like translation. Like, just do your best to capture. It's like what they would have done if they had your tools available, but don't be additive. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
If they could have like a clean, bright version of that color, they would have probably used that color, but don't add like shadow and chrome effects and, you know, new textures and or completely change the colors, period. That happens all the time and it's wild.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, no, I'm not a purist either, but that was just a very recent experience where I was like, I actually don't really feel like I'm getting anything out of this.
because
of the way it's, you know, I guess that's why they have like IDW artist editions and those sorts of things. You can just see the pencils.
Those are so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Charlotte, final thoughts.
Thanks,
both. Anything we missed? Yeah.
Great comic. Can't wait to read more, I guess. Again, I'm really excited for Wolverhampton.
I'm shocked you loved this, Charlotte. I don't know why. Like, it just doesn't seem... It's not, like, the kind of comic that I generally think is
I don't know. I think, like, reading this, I kind of realized that Hulk is one of my favorite characters in Marvel Universe. Like,
I mean, I guess...
Not quite Daredevil levels of, like, banger-to-banger runs, but, like...
Yeah.
Pretty often good to great runs, right? Like Peter David onto Greg Pak onto, I don't quite know what there is between Greg Pak and Al Ewing, but like that's a good trinity of great runs right there, right?
See, it's funny because I actually think Hulk is often talked about as a character pre-immortal without like without as many canonical sort of like go-tos.
Yeah.
I think because the early days are more hollow. You know, or people view them that way, right? Like, because you don't the, you know, like the, read the first 36 issues of Amazing Spider-Man thing with Hulk, right? Although, obviously, we could point to, like that Harlan Ellison, Jarella Hulk issue, you know, is definitely influential.
Which gets referenced in those Fantastic Four comics, which I actually really like. That Fantastic Four comic is a really nice, like, here's a little smattering of historical moments. It was fun to kind of be able to know what it was referencing.
Yeah, sure. No, but I actually think Hulk is often viewed as, like, missing more of a canonical go-to, which I always find a little strange. I feel like it's overlooking the David
stuff. It's Peter David, right?
Like, which I always find... I feel like there's a weird... I don't know. Maybe it just depends who you're talking to. But I feel like because David's on Hulk so long, that run is almost underrated, you know, where it's, like...
It does so many different things, too.
That's the start of that, too, is, like, you know, some of the best stuff in Marvel at the time, in a good Marvel period. And then, you know, I think it overstays its welcome. But yeah, then you go to Pac, and then you do have to jump ahead to Ewing, I think, because, you know, creators who are going to be on Hulk from here to there include, like, Jason Aaron and Mark Waid, and I don't know that we're going to be reading either of those runs, if I'm being honest.
Okay.
Yeah. So, there are some holes.
Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks both. It was good.
Yeah.
Good chat.
Well done, everybody.
Good chat, good podcast. If anyone listening wants to hear Charlotte and I on our other podcast, Extra Issues, 6 month early access to that is available on Patreon at the $5 a month level. And on that, we're going to finish up our Jeff Smith series doing Bone and his series Rassel. And then we're going to do 6 months on Sandman and the extended Sandman universe, including Lucifer. And then I think on the public feed, we're on Fantagraphics right now. So, which is just 6 months behind. So, check that out. We're doing fun stuff over there. I think Dave guested on the most recent episode in the public feed on 8-Ball. And that was fun.
I have not gone back and listened to that. I should go and listen to that and see if I sounded deranged talking about the weirdness of Daniel Klaus's 8-Ball.
You were kind of... I think you were pretty warm on it, but then you, like, you had... Well, you went a little crazy because you read everything Klaus that he'd ever done.
And
And you had a lot to, like, recommend of his, like, post-8-Ball stuff.
I'm not a huge 8-Ball head.
Post-8-Ball?
Yeah.
Yeah, that, like, initial run. But you liked a lot of his later stuff that made me curious about it. So
yeah, for sure.
Still hasn't
for sure
made time for it.
His Monica last year was definitely a popular best of the year pick.
You weren't as hot on that.
It's not mine, but it's a very interesting
stuff,
book.
Yeah.
I mean, it won the, volume of the year at the Angoulême comic French comic festival, like international comics festival, which is like big thing.
Charlotte, I meant to ask you, do you know the artist Pierre Lapalisse?
No, not at the top of my head. Let me see.
Okay, it's a French artist, and they do like some absurdist humor comics, and I just bought one that's finally been translated, and I was just curious if this was like a very famous individual in France or not.
No, I've heard of his comic, but no, not that famous. It seems pretty underground. I don't know that I've heard of him.
Zach, I'm reading underground French comics. That sounds cool. I mean.
Yeah, you're kind of going nuts, man. you send out your like best graphic novels of the month newsletter, and I'm like, this is some, you know, this is some deep stuff. Like
deep cuts, baby.
Yeah, I mean, I'm impressed. Genuinely, I think it's pretty cool. You're pretty deep in the weeds of like, you know, independent publishing. It's cool.
That's my thing. That's always been my thing.
That's not true. It's all.
Thanks for listening to my Marvelous Years podcast, Reading Club, where we go through the history of Marvel comics. You can find all our stuff at comicherald.com, patreon.com/mymarvelousyear. Music for the show is by Disaster Piece. I'm Dave. That's Zach. That's Charlotte. Together we are one. Together we are a team. Together we will never fight again. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next year.
See you next year.